This is Free Talk Live. We're doing kind of an unexpected early morning recording here. I was just finishing up a beautiful night, wrapping up a nice third of a hit of LSD and staying up all night long, watching the sunrise over Rogers Campground with this incredible view, just an absolutely amazing, splendid view of the mountains here. And, you know, it's interesting the people that you run into at 6 or 7 in the morning in a campground that just finished up 5 days worth of Shire Fest and Somalia Fest, which is kind of like a more decentralized Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Okay.
Oh.
That's sort of goes toward the roots of what Porkfest used to be.
Hmm.
And so I'm Ian Freeman. I'm joined this morning by Scott and Adam from ANCAP Barbershop.
Hey, how are you? This is Scott. How are you, Ian?
Man, you know, it's an incredible morning here at Rogers Campground, and you guys just rolled up.
Yes.
Literally probably no more than 30 minutes ago.
Yeah, maybe 15. Yeah. Something like that.
Well, yeah. And you came up, and me and this guy from the Free Aid tent, Michael, we were kind of just hanging out, and you dudes rolled up and, you know, just rolled out your car, 22 hours on the road. You came up from Huntsville, Alabama. First time in New Hampshire.
Yes.
What was your first impression?
My first impression, so we're pulling up, and yeah, there's about 1,300 miles nonstop, you know, except for monsters and stuff like that. but we pulled up. First thought before we pulled up was New Hampshire is an absolutely gorgeous state. Vermont's really, really nice, too. Once you get out of New York, it's great.
Mm.
But by the time we pulled in here, the sun had just come up. Everything is just really, really nice. Good
you
setting.
You had to see the sun rise on your way up here, right?
Exactly. Yep. It was perfect. And then we pulled in. And I said, "That's Ian Freeman. I need an excuse to go talk to him. I know who that is." and so, here we are.
First person we saw. And here we are now.
Exactly.
What about you, Adam? What was, you know, your first impression coming up in New Hampshire?
Pretty much the exact same. It was just so pretty, you know. And like you said, whenever we pulled in, I mean, we're surrounded by, you know, 180 degrees by mountains, you know, just beautiful, beautiful mountain ranges.
Yes.
Now, do they have mountains in Huntsville, Alabama?
Not really.
Around Huntsville, they sure do.
There's Montesano Mountain is in Huntsville.
Yeah, and Brindley Mountain is south of Huntsville.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're anything like these mountains. They're not.
Right?
Yeah,
it's more sporadic. Yeah, North Alabama is you know, reasonably flat, but there are mountains. But it's not like somewhere like here. I was saying this, you know, reminds me a lot of like North Carolina, like the Asheville, Weaverville area. It's kind of the same thing, very hilly and just very pretty in general compared to where we're from.
Yeah, the difference up here, in my experience, I'm from Florida originally.
Oh, okay,
that's where I grew up. Yeah, I spent 26 years there, and then I moved up here in 2006, so I've been here about a decade.
Right.
The big difference is the people. People in New Hampshire, they really love freedom. They really do have that kind of granite state, live free or die, built into them.
Right.
And there's a real difference, you know, that you have to kind of be up here.
Yeah.
To really understand.
No, I understand. I mean, it's just driving around here, it's tangible. It's in the air, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just impressionable from everything I've heard about it coming in here. And it was just really, really super pretty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we pulled up and we met two people and made two quick friends and then met a couple other people, made more friends. Everyone's so nice here. It's great.
Yeah, and I expect the remainder of your experience is going to be very similar. I mean, full of just wonderful, interesting people with, you know, all kinds of stories to tell about their experience and, you know, their path on how they got to New Hampshire, if they already live here, or, you know, maybe they're considering moving to New Hampshire. A lot of the people here are coming from outside and want to check out New Hampshire and, you know, see what it's like. And you guys came up here because of ANCAP Barbershop, I presume, which was a show that kind of came out of the lava flow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, basically, the lava flow turned me into an anarchist.
Which is a podcast for our listeners, by the way, maybe just tuning in. We've been broadcasting from the Lava Flow studios here for the last couple of days.
Right.
So it turned you into, do you say, an anarchist?
Absolutely, yes.
How did that happen?
Actually, listening to his Anarchy versus Minarchy episode just kind of pushed me over the edge. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And since then, I had started emailing, talking back and forth with Roger about my idea for just kind of a loose conversational podcast. You know, yeah. And that's what we do. We talk about, you know, whatever.
That's what I figured you did.
Exactly. And what it's kind of evolved into is usually we pick two topics and we just whatever, hit whatever points we want, toss it back and forth.
What's the typical length of the ANCAP barbershop?
An hour to an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So that's a little long for a podcast, right?
Yeah. I think most podcasts are between 30 minutes and an hour.
Yeah.
A lot of ours end up being an hour, hour 15. Every once in a while, you go a little bit long.
Y'all are doing like twice. You said once every 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Here?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, yep. Exactly. Every fortnight. We like that model. That's easy on us.
And you've been at it for not quite a year?
Right around a year. Yeah. Something like that. Don't make me do the math right now.
Yeah, it is pretty early. What is it? 7:52 right now. We're recording this here as the sun is rising. It's looking like it's going to be a beautiful day. Once again at Roger's Campground, I'm here with Scott and Adam from AncapBarbershop.com. So you told me off the air that you actually are a barber part-time, what's that all about?
Whenever I'm not doing my day job.
It's an odd side job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's a skill that I've been learning for a couple of years.
And your day job is dancer, exotic dancer?
Yeah. How'd you know?
Yeah, actually, that's been a thing that's gone back a couple of generations. My grandfather. And it's just been a family tradition, so yeah.
Oh, and can only imagine what Thanksgiving's like.
Yeah. It's great. Everybody has like you know, the things that you know, what the that cover up the nipples. What is that?
Pasties. Oh,
yeah. Pasties. That's pasties. What I'm looking for.
Cool.
That's a common thing.
So AncapBarbershop.com, Scott and Adam here, not so live from Wednesday, which will be the first day of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. Now, y'all had obviously heard about this event. When did you find out about it?
About Porkfest?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, we've known about it for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I mean, I probably first heard about it from Roger, from the Lava Flow. But I mean, since about a year ago now, I've been planning to come this year.
Have you been
like
to
that.
Other Freedom Festivals?
No, this is my first anything like this. Yes. Yeah.
Have you been to, like, you know, weekend concerts, camp out overnight kind of rock concerts or anything similar to that?
I'm trying to think if I've done anything camp out overnight like that.
I haven't camped since I was like 10 years old.
Yeah, I mean, like, so. I've slept out in the woods, but like...
I haven't done that.
At a campsite.
Okay, all right. Because I'm from, like I said, down the south as well, and there was this rock station that used to throw an event called Livestock in Tampa.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay. I know what that is.
You know that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've never went
to
that,
but... still throw it?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I remember seeing
it
years ago.
I'm actually not familiar with it.
Yeah. There was somebody I wanted to see there years ago and thought about going when I was in high school.
Who was it?
I think it was the Black Keys.
Oh, yeah, that's... Yeah,
absolutely. I don't remember for how many years it went, but it was epic. I mean, it was thousands of people, you know, the hard rockers from the South, you know, they're coming out and they're lining up. The best part about it was actually the line getting into this place.
Yeah.
I bet that was great.
Because it was literally
full of characters.
Full of characters. Yeah. A 2 hour long, like, tailgate party.
Right.
Where it's just standstill traffic. You know, you can't go anywhere. So it's hot as hell. It's the middle of summer in the South. And everybody's out of their cars, shirts off, you know, beers are cracking them open.
Right.
People are blazing up on the side of the road. Yeah. And, you know, no problems with police. Just people getting high and having a good time meeting each other.
That's
and
great.
Hanging out on the side of the road. And then eventually you get in and there's a pretty cool concert that goes for, you know, multiple days.
Yeah.
At that point, that was just the cherry on top, right? You're already having a good time.
It really was. But, it kind of forced you to meet the people that were there. And one of the nice things about the Porcupine Freedom Festival and these New Hampshire Freedom Festivals that happen here is it's easy to meet people. You know, it's easy to talk to folks because you're already kind of on the same page with most of them, right? Because you pretty much have the same concepts about freedom in your head, so you can talk about other things from kind of a different perspective. Yeah, it's pretty nice.
And you have that connection that you don't, at least for most people, probably have with the majority of the people in your life.
Right.
So, you know, at least us from North Alabama, that's something that we're not used to. So
right.
We're looking forward to making all those connections.
Yeah.
Can you stick with me for another segment?
Absolutely. Yes,
more
sir.
With Scott and Adam from AnCapBarbershop.com. This is Free Talk Live. We're at Rogers Campground. This is Free Talk Live at Rogers Campground for a morning episode of Free Talk Live as we are once again in the Lava Flow studios. You can go to thelavaflow.com, check out Roger Paxton's great podcast there. Had a lot of fun doing interviews with him this weekend. He was my main co-host for the last couple of days. And I have a couple of gentlemen here who are part of Rogers Network, Pax Libertas Productions, and Cap Barbershop. It's a once every 2 week show podcast that you guys are having to kind of hold back from what I understand because we're on the radio. So there's certain things that you can't say.
I didn't know where you were about to go with that.
And yeah. Well, where did you think I was going to go?
I had no idea, honestly, but not anywhere specific.
Yeah.
Once again, I am having to hold back. So, yeah.
So Scott and Adam are here with me, and this program, of course, brought to you by Bitcoin.com, where if you want to get the latest on what's going on with Bitcoin news, you can go to news.bitcoin.com and learn about that. It's an important thing if you don't know about this excellent decentralized currency. You get the basics over at Bitcoin.com, and if you're old school, you've been at it for a long time, then you get the information that you're looking for as well, as far as the latest news. So once again, that's Bitcoin.com. Are you guys into cryptocurrencies over there at AnCap Barbershop?
Yeah, we like to talk about them a little bit. I'm not a real tech-oriented person. Mm-hmm. I kind of understand the idea of the blockchain.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But,
do you have a Bitcoin wallet?
Yeah, I use Bread Wallet.
Okay.
I actually don't have... any other? I've been trying to think of what other. I'm thinking maybe a crypto note based altcoin that I want to get into, but I don't know what. I know Dash and Ethereum are huge.
Those two seem like they might be going to be big this week.
Yeah,
that's
really?
Something I'm interested in seeing. I'm just predicting that based on what I've heard people talk about. They have these market days up here in New Hampshire. So like.
Okay.
Every weekend in Manchester. I'm not sure how often on the seacoast.
Right.
But Liberty people kind of get together in a large-ish location and
yeah.
You know, they sell their wares, whatever the product or service is that they create, and they can sell it like a table or something like that.
Cool.
They do that. And people have been saying that because of the Bitcoin fees that Dash and Ether transactions are very, very common now, and it didn't used to be that way.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if that's one of the things that we're going to see at the Porcupine Freedom Festival, because this has always been like a bastion for cryptocurrency use.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like you can go to Little Zoe's Pizza
yeah.
down there, you can order your lunch and pay for it with Bitcoin.
Right, okay.
But why would you want to pay for it with Bitcoin if it costs $2 to send a Bitcoin transaction?
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out this week.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it was that high, and I'm glad that I brought...
The fee? You mean the fee to send a Bitcoin?
Yeah.
It's been going crazy.
Yeah, it's been just a little bit since
I
bought anything.
I was just listening on the web here. Isn't it unregulated, too, in New Hampshire? That's pretty new.
There was some news where New Hampshire did something that I think was pretty unprecedented. They passed a law that actually exempts... cryptocurrency
right.
only businesses from money transmitter regulations.
Okay.
So a lot of states have money transmitter laws. So if you think about like Western Union or MoneyGram, these are traditional money transmitter companies where you hire them to send somebody money generally.
Right.
So if you were to be doing that with cryptocurrency only in New Hampshire, you are protected from being regulated. And I don't think that exists anywhere else.
I think it's the only state. That's what they were saying.
I have definitely not heard. I've heard of that, but I haven't heard of that before in another state. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. I just didn't hear about it.
So there's some cool, like, exciting stuff happening up here. Was there anything, in New Hampshire that you saw that you just thought, wow, it's, as far as, like, news items or whatever, that's kind of unique or something that kind of jumped out at you? We were talking about like some of the wins that that New Hampshire had recently. We've had decriminalization.
Constitutional carry. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. In Alabama we're an open carry state, and we don't have constitutional carry. And I don't know. It's just kind of strange because you can open carry a gun, but then once you get into a car,
then it's a whole other set of rules.
Then you're breaking the law,
yeah. Right? Unless so, you have don't a get in a car around a cop if he right. sees you with a you yeah. know, gun.
And also don't get pulled
so
up.
So what do you do if you're just open carrying it and the cop's watching you, like, walk up to your car, you just throw it on the ground, get in your car, drive off?
It's an awkward situation. Yeah. Yeah. What do you do?
Do you pull out your pistol and unload in front of the police officer?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
People have been arrested for doing those things, and I think those were some of the reasons why that finally got repealed here in New Hampshire. So it's nice to see, you know, progress in that area.
That and now y'all are moving towards decriminalization.
That's
cannabis,
right? That's happening.
Where exactly are y'all at with that?
So the decrim passed the state house by about 90%.
Wow,
which was a new record high. It had been getting like, you know, more and more people voting for it over the years. It had been voted for in the state house multiple times.
Right,
it had been shut down in the state senate every single time until this time.
Okay.
Some of the worst prohibitionists were out with the last election. They just decided they'd had enough. They didn't want to even try running for re-election. So they were replaced by less offensive people in that particular department, and the Senate voted pretty overwhelming. I think it was like 74% voted to decriminalize. The governor has a new governor, Republican governor, has said he will sign it.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Great. Wow.
So
it's
going to happen at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine you're fighting an uphill battle with the Free State Project and all that happening here if you're trying to, you know, keep prohibition.
That's what I think that a lot of us want it to, you know, feel like for them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's like, if you're on the run here in New Hampshire, if you're a statist, if you love the government, you're going to have a real hard time, like, making your government bigger here because there's all these libertarians.
Right, it's flooding in.
Migration that are coming here from all around the world. And, you know, you just can't deny the fact that migrations have made a difference. Look at Utah, right, with the Mormons.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Who came there, the hippies moving to Vermont.
Right.
There's like no doubt that these migrations have had a huge impact on those areas. And so, and already, you know, we can point to so many different success stories here in New Hampshire.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. With only, you know, like a fraction of the Free State Project's total 20,000 and all the other people who, you know, don't join things, who are, you know, moving
here.
And getting getting active, getting out there and really just kind of creating a more free future.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure there was a decent population of libertarians and liberty minded people already in New Hampshire anyways, and or, you know, probably the same amount as everywhere. You know. Yeah. So, you know, you don't count them. Yeah.
There's more.
Yeah. Before the Free State Project started, you know what I mean? There was already existing.
Have been coming here for decades too. Yeah. So like you've got the native Granite Staters who are just kind of hardcore freedom people.
Uh-huh.
But there's also those people who, you know, before the Free State Project for decades had seen Live Free or Die. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
And you know, they came up here because they knew it was a special place.
Yeah.
So all of that, you know, combined together.
Right. I can totally see, like, New Hampshire, if the union allows it, you know, being a state to secede, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah? You guys in favor of secession?
I think I am. I hear, like, Shane Radcliffe
has
had some stuff to say about, like anarchists being in favor of secession. But I can't have a problem with it.
I love the idea, personally.
Yeah, I do, too. I really do.
I think it needs to happen. The sooner it happens, the better off we're all going to be.
Yeah.
Right.
The quicker you get an opportunity to have another little experiment where you can experiment a different political ideology, that's, you know, it's better for everyone because the more you're experimenting, the more you figure out what works and what doesn't work.
And that's what this is. I mean, it's a grand experiment in migration of libertarian people to one geographic area. It was an honor to, you know, encounter you guys this bright and early, and I appreciate you coming on Free Talk Live with me for the first half hour of tonight's show.
And thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It was great. Yeah.
Hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks, guys. That's Scott and Adam from AncapBarbershop.com. More Free Talk Live coming up.
Bitcoin.com recently reported Bitcoin transaction fees have increased by more than 1,200% since 2015. To many Bitcoin proponents, the current fee market is moving way too fast, making Bitcoin unusable for certain transactions. The fee market and slow confirmation times have also increased the tension concerning the block size debate. However, if there are wallets with low amounts of Bitcoin that can't cover the fees, they become virtually unspendable. Learn more at news.bitcoin.com. That's news.bitcoin.com. We'll be right back.
It's Free Talk Live back in our Keene, New Hampshire studio from an excellent Somalia Fest and Shire Fest and all the other fests that sprung from that over the weekend. Ian and Mark back here in Keene. And, of course, you can finally join us again on what is intended to be an open phones talk radio show, but we have had closed phones for the last 5 days and half hour because of continuous interviews and recorded segments. We had to, if you're just tuning in or tuning back in, we had to record the last several shows due to being on a campground and not having the ability to do a live show, or at least not having the easy ability to do a live show.
You need a pretty big internet pipe to do what we do.
No, you really don't. You only need about
cameras.
Well, we didn't do that on we didn't do cameras because we didn't have that much bandwidth. But yes, okay, so to do what we do, normally you need a good internet pipe because cameras do have a lot. But to just broadcast from a campground, all you need is 64 kilobits a second. That's not, or even 30 kilobits. It's not a whole lot.
Yeah, but you get some dropout with a live broadcast, and that's not worth it.
You can. And it was a struggle for a long time. I mean, we've been doing these remote broadcasts from Rogers Campground up in the beautiful White Mountains of Lancaster, New Hampshire for 8 years. Was it 2009 when the Free State Project first brought back the Porcupine Freedom Festival to Rogers? Because I remember somebody told me it was 2 years where it was at the state-run campground.
Yeah, it was there 2 years.
Called Gunstock. 07. And we moved here in 06, but we didn't get to go to Porkfest that year because we moved after it. So the first one we went to was 07, and that was at Gunstock. And then I think there was another one after that that we went to Gunstock.
Right. 07 and 08 was at Gunstock. Right. 09 was at Rogers Campground, right. And it's been there since.
Right. And so a great campground, just absolutely a beautiful place. But you know, as is should be the rule when you're on a campground, you really should be getting away from technology, right? Like you're supposed to get closer to the earth, to the people, to your neighbors.
I'm not sure the campgrounds, commercial campgrounds, are really about that.
Well, okay.
Perhaps the government state-run campsites are that way. They're sort of less convivial, that kind of thing. But the private campgrounds tend to be of the sort where you go to hang out with other people who are doing the sort of the same thing, to get away from it, get away from your normal stay, and have a nice time at the campground.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, and that's why a lot of campgrounds do try to provide amenities like Wi-Fi, internet access, and things like that as best as they can. But I've always been of the mindset that, you know, if you're camping, that the whole idea is to get away from the normal flow of life, the normal way things go. That's at least been my philosophy or understanding about it, and that's hard for me to do because, you know, I can't get away for half an hour from these blinking boxes that you know, chain me to to this studio.
Where, you have chained yourself to the
where if something goes
blinking
wrong,
boxes.
Well, somebody's got to fix the boxes, Mark.
They do.
And if I walk
yes.
away, then it's not you. Sure as hell aren't going to do it.
Nope.
So.
Most of the blinking box issues have to do with LRN.fm, which is an incredible online Liberty network that people can go and listen to Liberty programming 24 hours a day.
No, there were some mistakes made on our network's side this
sure.
time around that made for frustrating things. So I'll give you an example. Last night, they, you know, again, mistakes get made, board ups, forget things or whatever. I appreciate all of Genesis Communication Network's hard work, but you know, sometimes somebody drops the ball. And last night, somebody forgot to connect to the studio last night during the show. So we recorded all the segments as we should have. They put the segments back into play, and our radio listeners didn't know this because the radio listeners don't rely on this studio to hear the content when we're on remote, but our stream listeners do. So they got you know, a whole half hour's worth of dead air before I was able to find out.
Dead air with commercials.
Correct.
It's the most insulting kind of dead air. Listen to our dead air, then we're going to yeah. run some ads.
So, you know, that's frustrating when that happens. And because I'm on a campground, you know, my phone's over somewhere charging. I didn't have the ability to get the message. I had to find out by two-way radio that, you know, our systems were down. I'm on a third of a hit of LSD. And, you know, all of these things coming together, it makes for a very interesting tech support journey. So was able to get that solved. But nonetheless, there's always something. It's like, you know, communications, they don't work real well at a campground. So to, you know, bring that back around, that's why we ended up having these recorded shows. Plus, we weren't able to negotiate the usual recording space with Rogers Campground that we had. And I'm glad that happened because it kind of forced us to try something new. You know, we're radio guys. We're lazy. We're gonna do kind of like the default way we always do things, as long as it's working. Well,
I think that people generally do, you know, professionals generally do things the way they do things until circumstances require them to do something
otherwise.
Different.
Yeah.
I think that there are...
But radio people are notoriously lazy.
There's been some great, you know, moments on Free Talk Live while we're at the Porcupine Freedom Festival where people have called in, but...
Not that many.
Some. That's what I said, some.
Yeah, I mean, nothing memorable, but...
I can tell you there was a caller one time while I was running the show in there that said that all you freedom porcupine people, I wish you'd leave New Hampshire. And that was a pretty good conversation, in my opinion. So, you know, that's memorable to me. I presume I can remember that one, then I can remember others.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you're going to always, when you have open phones, there's going to be gems and there's going to be junk. I mean, that's just sort of the nature of that.
So it's our job as professional broadcasters to go find the gems that are, you know, there for interviews and do great programming without calls at while we're on site in these sorts of locations.
Right. And so in this case, we were, you know, by circumstance, we had to do something different. We already had been recording shows when we were at Bitcoin conferences. And so we just decided to do the same thing at the Somalia Fest and Shire Fest. And I think it really worked out. It really worked out well, in my opinion. It was our first time ever recording shows at those locations. We always broadcasting live, and even when you're broadcasting live, there's always some janky stuff that goes on with, like, dropped connections and dropped packets and information, and it's always one challenge after another. And so recording at least eliminates the point of failure on performing the show, because you don't have anything, you know, if you're just recording into microphones into a laptop, you're very unlikely going to have a failure in that technology. The failure always comes in on that campground when it comes to communicating out from the campground. So then we, you know, upload the files to our network. They played them back, and you guys got to hear what it was like to be at Somalia Fest, the interviews that we always love to
Shire
do there.
Fest.
Shire Fest, that's right. Shire Fest. It's now the competing festival that, Mark, you came up with and Shire Dude signed on to. Who announced that the number one rule of Shire Fest is you have to have your own fest, which I think is a smart rule because it encourages more decentralization. And I wanted to comment on the decentralized aspect of Shire Fest and Somalia Fest. It was, I thought that was good. I mean, it was a good first year event. I mean, I didn't expect the campground to be packed in any way, and it wasn't. But there was a slow trickle of people who were coming in and enjoying themselves throughout the day and at night, and you know, just kind of enjoying each other's company. There wasn't any special speaker. There wasn't some big name politician or, you know, TV star or whoever. That, you know, there was nobody who was scheduled to be there. It was just camping. It was just libertarians camping in the woods. And what will grow from that beginning, I don't know. I'm kind of interested and excited to find out over time to see, you know, what happens next year with Shire Fest, because I suspect it's going to happen again. And so we'll certainly let you know as we know more about that.
Well, for me, the roadmap is already laid out. So the Porcupine Freedom Festival started, I can't tell you how many years ago, but something like 13 years ago with the Escape to New Hampshire. Then the Pork Fest came the first go around. And, you know, at none of these events was there a big deal. You were just talking to some activists. Maybe there'd be a speech scheduled, but it was somebody who was already in New Hampshire. I can't remember the first time they brought in a big name, but, you know, I don't know that the big names were necessary for this. I kind of feel like, you know, it grew to its level with the excitement of being with friends.
This is Free Talk Live. You can join us 855-450-FREE. Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live here, you can join us on the radio and take control of the airwaves. You can bring up whatever you want. Just dial on in here toll-free at 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. First time in not quite a whole week, but almost, that we've been able to take phone calls. We've been live, well, not really live, but recorded live on the road from Rogers Campground for the last several days. Mark, you took off 2 days before I did. I think, what, Sunday evening?
Yep.
Or Sunday afternoon, you drove out of there as soon as we finished recording that show. I stayed on through this morning, leaving at around 9 a.m., so right at around the time when the Porcupine Freedom Festival officially began. And
did they kick you out?
No. No, they didn't. I mean, I don't know how long I would have been able to stay before they did, but it was funny. I was offered, on multiple occasions, I was offered the ability to be smuggled in the campground, like stay on people's campsites or in people's campsites and like kind of just be ferreted around secretly and silently throughout all of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. One particular location, I won't say which one, to protect the folks involved. They said that they would lock down their campsite and require a wristband in order for anyone to get in. So there would be, you know, total security around who could get into their place and keep me there. And if, you know, and they would get me whatever it is I wanted them to get me.
Sounds like fun.
I could have stayed at Pork Fest secretly and lived like a king, a probably very dirty king, at this one campsite. And I, you know, said I'm
security
honored.
Would have been circling.
I said I'm honored by the invitation, but I probably need to go home. I've got stuff that needs to get done.
Indeed.
You know, it's one thing to spend a week in a campground. It's another thing to spend two. And I would if I could, but it was just, you know, the responsibilities call, and it's just hard to get anything done from that campground. Man, if you've got something you need to get done, you better just leave the damn campground and go to McDonald's, just because, you know, there's always so many
for
people.
The broadband.
Well, not just for the broadband, but just because it's just so easy to get involved in a conversation and get distracted. And you know, you want to talk to people. You don't, you know, if you're sitting there on a laptop and people want to talk to you, you want to have an interaction. You don't want to just sit there and
all our remote broadcasts, every convention I go to, the camping festivals, whatever it might be, it all exists in sort of a time warp.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I didn't stay, is because I could only afford so much time to be warped. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got things to do back at my place.
The email just piles up.
That it does.
You know, even though you don't really have anything to do during the day, effectively, you know, you could get up and sit by a pool all day if you wanted to. I mean, so there's really nothing to do except for the things you come up with on that campground, except for hang out and talk to folks. Despite all the illusion of time that you have, you really can't use any of it in any sort of productive capacity besides what you can find in that moment right there in front of you in the campground. So it was great. Smalley Fest, Shire Fest. What I was thinking of doing, for those of you who are there, and I've yet to figure out how to do this. I've started a thread on a Shirefest forum, created a forum, Mark, for Shirefest on the Shire Society forum. So for people who were there this year and for people who are planning to go next year.
How would they get there? How would they find it?
Forum.shiresociety.com. Okay. That'll take you right there. And I put a thread up about a picture dump. So what I took a bunch of cool pictures. I didn't take a whole lot, but I took some that were pretty cool, like of the rave that Will Coley had.
How was that?
It was fantastic. Dude, he was great. Great DJ, and went for 5 hours straight on Monday night. It was only supposed to be 3 hours. It was supposed to be 8 p.m.
That's
to 11.
That's what happens when you don't drink.
Yeah, man. He's a performer.
Yeah.
And Will Coley from Muslims for Liberty, of course, who we've had on the show a number of times, turns out he's a killer DJ as well. And he just, you know, he rocked out the electronic music tracks and until the wee hours in the morning. The Rogers campground manager was even there partying with us after hours, because you're not supposed to make noise after 11 o'clock at Rogers Campground, but it went for another 2 hours after that, and she showed up and was dancing with us. So
awesome.
I guess we were on her good side for that, so that was much appreciated. But yeah, man, just it was a great time. And so the people who have photos from Shire Fest and Somalia Fest, what I thought would be cool, because, you know, everybody's going to upload their pictures to their Facebook page or
sure.
Instagram or whatever. But I thought it would be cool if there was some way, and I'm sure there are like a bunch of them, but I don't know what they are. And, you know, my point of posting this thread on the Shire Society forums and the new Shire Fest forum at forum.shiresociety.com was kind of just feel out what the options are. Like, what are the options for creating a dumping grounds for photos where a group of people can just upload all their pictures into one big place where you can, I don't know, organize or figure out who's got what, or at the very least see it all. That way it's not just a bunch of individuals uploading to their Facebook pages, which if you don't know individual A, you won't get to see individual right. A's pictures. So, you know, I know there's got to be some sort of awesome tool for this. I just don't know what it is. So that's kind of step one, is to ascertain what's the best platform, what's the best app, what's the best website for group photo uploading, you know, that preferably has some sort of backup feature as well, to where if the site goes out of business, the pictures would still be downloadable. So would love to have people's input on that. I'm sure we have some brilliant listeners who've done this before, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's this tool. So you can go over to forum.shiresociety.com and post in there. And so my idea was, Mark, to sort of collect pictures from whoever it was that was taking pictures. I know Shire Dude had a video camera there, so I'm sure he's got something. Collect the people who had pictures from Shire Fest and Somalia Fest and put them all in one place. That way we can then promote those photos. People can pick their favorites or share those on social media, like, oh, look what you missed. This is what happened at, you know, Shire. Oh, you're at Pork Fest? Well, here's what you missed at Shire Fest, because you didn't come, you know, 5 days early and hang out with the decentralized, you know, libertarians and anarchists and voluntarists. This is what you missed out. I think that would be kind of a cool thing, because that's a, you know, a good sales tactic, right? You know, the
Agreed.
Fear of missing out. And hopefully it'll be even better and bigger next year. And that the decentralized aspect will keep bringing interesting events, like the rave that Will threw, or the big party that Jim Babb threw from former co-host on the Freedom Fiends. He threw last night, the very last night of Shire Fest. He threw a pretty epic campfire party out at his campground, and it was nice because, again, we were recording shows, so we got to hang out every night that we were at Shire Fest. That was a new thing for Free Talk Live. Getting actually more social time at night was something fresh and fun. But Jim Babb, of course, threw this party right in the middle of the conservative camping area where a bunch of pork festers were already setting up. So some lady got mad at 1 o'clock in the morning.
As they tend to. Yeah. It's you know, it's one of the problems with sort of mixing these groups.
Right.
You've got this sort of, you know, group of people that want to do a, you know, family thing, go to bed at a reasonable hour, not have people tromping through their sites and leaving their kids unattended and all the reasonable complaints that they have. They're completely reasonable, these complaints. And then there's people that go for a party. And it just doesn't fit real well.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And I think that, you know, schisms, they hurt people sometimes when they happen, but I've always been in favor of embracing the schism, or for a long time have been in favor of embracing that schism. And I think this is a good thing. I think that having these two events is ultimately going to lead to more people that'll be happy on both ends of things. More people that want to have more of a party atmosphere, and the people that want to have the more safe, family-friendly atmosphere, you know, they can go to Pork Fest. The people that want to, you know, have fun can go to Shire Fest. And there will inevitably still be some crossover between the two events, but I think that it's for the better to see how this new flower is going to blossom, how this new thing, this creative destruction that has happened from the ashes of what was the old Pork Fest. This new event is more of what the old Pork Fest used to be, you know, more decentralized within. There's no committee. There's no, you know, security enforcement. There's no, you know, it's just people camping. And then if you want to speak, you want to have a stage with speakers, well, get constructing, because you can build a stage and put speakers on it.
Just sure.
Rent a campsite, put a stage on it. You want to perform music? Go ahead, perform some music. So people will put these things together on their own. Will it mean that there's going to be a fancy John Stossel or somebody like that coming at some point? No, I don't think that. You know, it's very unlikely that somebody attending Shire Fest is going to be like, I really want John Stossel to come, so I'll throw down $10,000
John
for that.
Stossel is welcome, though.
Yeah, sure, sure. As would be anyone else who wanted to attend.
BYOB, buddy.
So you know, that's kind of my initial thoughts on the Shire Fest, and I think that I'm going to write up like a piece about it for freekeen.com when I get a chance to breathe. I mean, we're always in catch-up mode after these things are done. Still haven't even unpacked yet. I got home and went to sleep because I had been up all night. And hopefully I got some really nice sunrise pictures because I took probably like 200 or something like that this morning. So we'll see about that too. Once we get the pictures online, we will let you know where to find them. Meanwhile, if you were at Shirefest or Somalia Fest, jump on the Shire Society forums and say hello to your camping neighbors at forum.shiresociety.com. More Free Talk Live is on the way. Coming up, hour number two.
Do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. Fees are low and transactions are confirmed instantly. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Help people take control over their financial future today. Find out more at dash.org.
Free Talk Live.
Talk Live. You can dial toll free here. You can bring up anything that you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got Ian.
And Mark.
Finally back in Keene, New Hampshire. Beautiful Keene studios where we can actually show you a video feed again and we can take phone calls because we're no longer in the middle of the woods at Rogers Campground in the northern White Mountains of New Hampshire. But there are still a number of people who are up there as the Porcupine Freedom Festival has begun today and continues throughout the weekend. So I wish them the best of luck. It looked like, you know, it looked like it was going to turn out to be a decently attended pork fest. I mean, there were a lot of people who were rolling in yesterday, which was the day before the Porcupine Freedom Festival. I mean, a lot of people showed up yesterday. So I would imagine if that level of people showing up continues in the Pork Fest, generally tends to have a lot of people come in Friday and Saturday, peaks on Saturday night, and then, that's it. I expect that same pattern will occur this weekend, and I think people there will probably, have a great time. But maybe it'll be a little smaller. We don't know. Maybe it'll be bigger than last year. Some people were saying this was going to be their last Pork Fest, but maybe others had come back this year, and, they felt felt a little more comfortable coming back after protesting the last one. So we'll see. And I'll have a little recap written up for freekeen.com about Shire Fest and Somalia Fest and the future of what, could happen down the line. So let's go to your phone calls and thoughts. Coming up, we've got, cultural appropriation, Venezuela update, Whole Foods taking over Amazon, an update on the young man who was delivered back from North Korea in a coma. It's not good news. And we'll take your calls and thoughts. Let's go to Bob. He's in Milwaukee. Bob, you're on Free Talk Live. Hello there.
Well, hello. Good evening. How are you doing?
Welcome. You're on the air. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Well, I wanted to lift up the Congressional Women's Softball game. They're playing the Bad News Babes in Washington, D.C. at Watkins at the Capitol. And they started this evening at 7 p.m. Eastern time, so they're playing as we speak.
Now, why does that matter to you?
Well, they're raising money for young women with breast cancer.
Okay,
just young women with breast cancer?
Women under the age of 40. Breast cancer. So.
Why do they not matter?
They do matter, but this group's focus is on the younger women.
Yeah, okay. you gotta have a focus. I mean, it's I'm trying to figure it all out, but okay.
Sorry, lady, you've got breast cancer and you just turned 41.
Yeah, there's plenty of focus on breast cancer generally, and it's if you're gonna have a charity, you have to focus on something.
Okay, there's a lot of charities out there. What else are they doing that's noteworthy? Are you just announcing that they have a baseball game coming up?
Well, they've had a game and they didn't get their practice didn't get shot up, so that's good.
Okay, I guess that is good.
Well, I'd sort of like to find out if they're if anybody's able to help us with scores as they go along. I'm not able to follow it. I don't have the TV or the,
this
or
isn't a sports show, so no, we're not going to be able to do that. But I imagine
I have
there's,
no clue.
Well,
yeah, I imagine.
I'm sorry about your attitude. Goodbye.
No, it doesn't have anything to do with attitude. I just, you know, find sports to be boring. You know, nothing personal. Toll free number here 855-450-FREE 855-450-3733. I mean, I'm not going to give you the wrestling updates either. Although Daryl, I bet would if he were here.
Yeah, I got no clue what the, you know, but I don't know how you're going to find out that information. I suppose what you'd need to do is search for it on Facebook. Maybe you can find somebody live streaming it. Look for a hashtag, Women's Congressional Softball or something.
Unlikely, but it's possible. It would be better than asking us for help.
Yeah, more effective than that.
Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. I mean, look, if you love sports, that's awesome. Everybody needs to have a
hobby. I think
that
the guy, the guy's, for whatever reason, he's interested in this game and he's interested in the charity that's involved.
Hey,
I have no
him.
Particular problem with that.
Good for him. But we're not going to get on the air and give local sports scores ever on this show. Ever.
That much is true,
certainly.
But do you see how he might have experienced a little surliness from you, though?
Sure, sure. He seemed a little surly.
Why
though.
Do you think that is?
Maybe he was projecting.
Why do you? No. I heard surliness too. So why do you think you might have felt surly toward this guy?
I don't feel surly towards him.
That's what you always say.
Yeah,
Sitting sports. Over here completely peacefully telling the world to go to hell.
No, I wouldn't say that. It's just like sports are boring. Who cares? Who cares about sports? I mean, a lot of people care, but I don't. And this is my show. So we're going to go on. 855-450-FREE. That's
Free Talk Live. Call in about anything you want to talk about.
450-3733. He did call in about what he wanted to talk about.
He did,
And he talked about it.
Yes, he did.
And then we moved on. See, that's a misconception about Free Talk Live is that just because you can call about what you want doesn't mean you get to talk forever. I mean, my God, if we let that happen, we'd have the most boring seminar callers you could ever imagine.
It's true.
Who would just feel entitled to go on. And then sometimes people will complain about that. At least to his credit, he didn't complain about it. He just didn't like it. So, you know, some people out complained about they didn't get enough time to say what they wanted to. Well, look, most shows wouldn't even let you on the air. If you're not on the topic that the talk show host wants to discuss, you don't get on 99% of like every talk show that has ever been produced. That's how it works. So, you know, if you want sports, there's all kinds of sports stations, and even them, I don't think they would give you updates on the women's congressional
I think softball. The best bet is going on Facebook and looking.
Yeah. So, toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Let's go to Skype, where Stefan is on the line from Ohio. Hello, Stefan.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, what's on your mind tonight?
You enjoy your festival?
Yeah, man. It was fantastic.
What was on my mind today is I was thinking a lot about this earlier. What do you guys think of GMOs, for example?
Genetically modified organism?
Yes.
So,
like how they people are freaking out because apparently they can modify a tomato seed, for example, to grow like a ton more tomatoes than it usually does.
I support it. I think that experimenting with nature is something that man has always done, and as long as we do it as responsibly as possible. I think it's a good thing. If it can mean greater yields for crops, that means feeding more hungry people around the world. That ultimately, I think, is the goal, to increase the amount of yield per square foot of cubic foot or whatever of farming space.
You have found my Achilles heel when it comes to the government. You know, most people out there that are voluntarists are sort of, they have one sort of pet government issue, and mine is food labeling.
Uh-huh.
And, well...
You want to force food labeling on people?
I just think that consumers are too stupid.
How in the world, Mark, do they exist in Europe and China and other countries where they don't have the same food labeling requirements?
The same. They have more strict in
many
cases.
Maybe in some of Europe, but in a lot of cases,
they
don't.
In China, I can tell you how they exist, with lead in their paint. That's how they exist. So, you know, in many cases, people don't...
Don't eat paint chips, okay? It's a bad idea.
It's good advice, but sometimes that happens.
But it's tasty.
Well, no, actually what I learned, this is something I learned recently at a hearing at the State House. You know, normally they're dreadfully boring, and this was a particularly boring hearing. It was about lead paint rules in New Hampshire and, like, updating them or something like that. And they answered the question of why lead paint was so dangerous when, you know, I mean, it's not like people are specifically eating paint chips. That's not the problem. The thing is, like, the lead is heavy, so it comes, like, down and sits on the floor, so, like, the lead dust or whatever stays there. And so the babies that are crawling around on the floor,
licking the floor,
and then putting their thumb in their mouth, that's how they're getting the lead poisoning. So I thought that was interesting, and it'll happen like from the inside of window jams. So like if you're opening and closing like a window, and then little bits of lead come down and
that's how it
come
works
down onto the floor. So well, I learned some stuff about that.
You talked about, you know, maybe overseas, you know, there's a lot of labeling issues. Well, a lot of the regulations on food are more stringent. I would argue a lot of the stuff we eat here is probably illegal over there. And even now, people don't know what they're eating.
It depends. I think it's a mixed bag. I mean, I'm always pleasantly surprised when somebody comes back from another country and like brings home a little few little gifts, and I look at the labeling and I'm like, this doesn't say anything about what's in this product. And you know, it's always an adventure eating that stuff because it seems risky. It seems scary. More coming up here. Hang on, Stefan. We'll continue with labeling and GMOs in moments. Yeah! It's Free Talk Live. Dial toll free here at 855-453. 855-450-3733. We've got Skype as well, and the Skype username tonight is lrn.fm. With you here in the studio, it's Ian.
And Mark.
And Bitcoin.com. It's the online destination in the Bitcoin universe. If you're buying Bitcoin, you want to learn all about Bitcoin, Bitcoin.com is a great place to go to do that. Maybe you want to speak your mind to other Bitcoin users. They've got a forum, and it's always open and censorship-free at forum.bitcoin.com. It's a great site, and it's packed full of useful news and information over at news.bitcoin.com. Of course, as we mentioned actually during the Shire Fest, we did manage to get the news headline that that Bitcoin has now received over 70% and now over 80% actually of the mining or the new Bitcoin proposal, SegWit2x, to increase the block size and add segregated witness, these technologies that'll supposedly help Bitcoin scale up for the future.
World War Geek has been won, and that's really the end of the story.
It ain't over yet. Don't be singing there, Miss Fat Lady.
We'll see if they can bring something back, but it looks like World War Geek is over.
It's looking good. It's looking promising for the future of Bitcoin with this 80% of the mining power now behind this new SegWit2x probe.
Sold some altcoin. I bought some Bitcoin today.
You're getting out of the altcoins?
Not entirely out of the altcoins.
You're confident.
I just feel like this is a good time to be in Bitcoin for the next few weeks or whatever. I don't have a problem with diversifying into altcoins, but that's what I'm saying. So if people want to, you know, they can take my advice. It's not even advice. It's just the truth.
So if you want to learn the latest about what's going on with Bitcoin, because the 80% that are on board with the miners, they're not yet doing SegWit. They're just signaling that they will do SegWit when the time comes, which will be in about 1 month from today. So we still have some waiting to do, Mark. These fees that are so detrimental to the possible future of Bitcoin, the insane Bitcoin fees that have been going on over the last few months, those are not going down anytime soon. We're going to have several weeks more that we'll have to wait until SegWit gets activated, because right now they're just running alpha software. They, you know, are in a testing phase at this moment. So we got to wait. The bugs got to get ironed out. The beta's got to come out at the end of the month. They got to run that beta for a good few weeks before they'll feel comfortable with flipping the on switch. So we got some time here, and hopefully Bitcoin will not lose completely its market dominance, which it has for, you know, the last few months, gone down from about 85% of the total market cap of all cryptocurrencies combined down to, as of right now, according to coincap.io, which is a great little website that has all kinds of info about Bitcoin on it and other cryptocurrencies. It is currently at 40.5%, and it had dipped below 40% over the weekend. So 40% for Bitcoin's market domination. It's barely in the lead at this point. I mean, it's only got several billion dollars on top of Ethereum, which says $31 billion for Ethereum.
Took a bit of a beating today. On one exchange, it dropped down to $13 in a flash drop.
Wow, that's crazy.
And it's back up.
It's at 332 right now, though.
Right, just on one exchange. Yeah. And I would presume that exchange
could have been a fluke.
It was weird.
All right, so toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Let's go back to Stefan in Ohio. He called about genetically modified organisms and labeling. And, Mark, you said this is your pet issue, that you want to have the government, you want to have the FDA, USDA, you want to have these organizations around to force labeling on companies? I'm surprised.
When I see I look at countries that don't have labeling laws, and I see real problems as far as
what are the problems?
There's all kinds of problems, Ian. There's things like stuff going into food that people don't want,
like peanuts or something like that.
Well,
or what?
that's a real issue. Like, people die from peanuts, right? You know,
yeah.
And people make fun of it. People are like, "Oh, no big deal. I'll bring some peanuts to work."
Oh, you know, the lady's like, "Until your kid is kid is dead or whatever."
Right. So, I mean, you know, this is some really important stuff, and it. I mean,
we have to put important things in the government's hands. Is that what you're saying? If someone could die, then the government needs to get involved. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is the government's a monopoly on violence, right?
Uh-huh. And so we need to be violent to our neighbors if they don't label their things in the way that we want them to?
If you're going to label something as if you're not going to label something, put peanuts in the ingredients, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's done in a factory that does peanuts. If you're not going to make it clear to somebody who has these allergies or whatever, then I mean, don't you think there's some culpability in that?
But we already have laws like that. Every piece of candy I've ever seen in my life says, "This was made in a factory that has peanuts and soy."
But Mark's defending that. He's saying that he wants the government around for that. Now he loves the federal government because they have labeling mandates.
I think that's being a little extreme. Like, oh, he loves the federal
that's
government.
That's what Ian does for a living. Ian tries to goad me into an argument. He's just looking for the next
claim
time
to
I call
be a
him
voluntarist.
I call him
say
a BAMF.
You want mandatory
Whoa! Yes, you can. You don't get to decide what the label means. I'll explain what a voluntarist is. A voluntarist is a person who's willing to let the children go play on the other side of the street if they own that side of the street, and not go over there and shoot every one of them in the head when they don't follow the rules. You can go where you want and do what you want as long as you buy that stuff. Okay, as long as you own the property. I'm trying to tell you what a voluntarist is because you don't seem to know.
You're not making any sense.
You think a voluntarist can do anything that they want, and the answer is no.
No, a voluntarist is someone who believes that all human interaction is consensual, period. That's the end of story.
Right. So you can go on your property, and you can shove peanuts down the throats of every infant out there with allergies if that's what you want to do.
No, I don't want to do that. But I trust in the market to solve problems, not the violence of the state.
The market has not solved problems in this area in plenty of countries.
They haven't been allowed to.
Sure they have. There's no law in the United States that says that you can't put, you know, non-GMO on your labels. But the fact is, these aren't going on people's food. Now, I personally am for using genetically modified organisms to grow more food for more people.
Yeah.
However, I think that people should be able to decide what they get, you know, what they buy and that sort of thing. And most manufacturers will fight against labeling.
But do people really know what they're buying? Think about it. Do people really know what they're buying now? I mean, for example, tonight we made like chicken strips for dinner, and I was like, oh, I wonder what's in these. I turn them around, and there's like 1,000 different ingredients. Do you think labeling really matters? It's already being labeled. So, I mean, it could be like...
Well, it is buyer beware either way. I mean,
here's a scenario. Let's imagine that a magazine or a private group at a college comes together and say, we're going to rate foods. We can be like the Snopes of foods, and people can come onto our website or read our magazine or whatever, and we'll tell people exactly what's in it. I'm sure there would be somebody out there doing that.
We've got all kinds of online sources to find out every unscientific non-fact about food that's out there. They're prevalent, and there's a great deal of them. So, yeah, you can hunt this information down if you want to hunt it down, I just like manufacturers to want to label their products. And the fact that they don't want to makes me think they're crooks.
I'm sure there are plenty of manufacturers who would be happy to label their products.
There's
plenty
of them,
Stefan,
but not most of them.
Tonight. There's more on the way here in moments. 855-450-FREE. Looks like Mark just turned in his voluntarist card. It's Free Talk Live.
North Deport is a Liberty-inspired fiction podcast about a band on tour. Each episode chronicles the band's adventures in the form of a radio interview at a tour stop location. Listen as North Deport explores Liberty themes in friendly ways, with humor and music. To listen to the podcast and the accompanying album, please visit northdeport.com. That's NORTHTOPORT.com. Or just search North Deport in your favorite podcatcher.
It's Free Talk Live. You may dial in toll-free and bring up anything that you like. Our number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And Skype on into the show. It's Skype username LRN.FM. With you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Mark.
Also, I do want to let you know that Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash. You've heard about Bitcoin, but do you know anything about Dash? Well, you ought to learn about it because Dash is on the rise. It's on the up and up. It's one of the most, I think, promising cryptocurrencies out there for people to look at, because maybe Bitcoin isn't going to survive as the number one cryptocurrency forever. I mean, the Model T didn't last forever either. So, you know, is Bitcoin days numbered? And what will rise to be its number one competitor? Maybe it'll be Dash. Dash is digital cash. It's a digital money platform that's designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast, private, and easy. The fees are way lower than Bitcoin. And transactions are fast and can even be confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone anywhere in the world, anytime, for just pennies on the dollar. And that's what people were doing at Shirefest. Nobody wanted to buy a cup of coffee with Bitcoin at Shirefest this year. I mean, at previous Freedom Festivals in the woods at Rogers Campground, Bitcoin was tremendously popular.
King. Yeah.
But even I did not spend any Bitcoin while I was at Rogers Campground. And that was a first for me for years. I mean, I went and I bought some breakfast this morning, bought some Little Zoe's pizza the other day, and even though I could have paid Little Zoe's or the breakfast place with Bitcoin, I didn't do it. And I couldn't justify it. I'll keep doing it in Keene for a while, just because I want to keep bringing people business who accept Bitcoin here, just as a, you know, almost a subsidy at this point, because I would feel bad if they didn't get any business with Bitcoin. But the average person isn't going to want to do that. Dash avoids that problem, among other things. You can go to dash.org to learn more about Dash, and you can help create a better financial system for everyone. Take control of your financial future today and find out more about Dash and why there's a lot of momentum behind it at dash.org.
If you search hashtag first dash wallet, that's hashtag first dash wallet. I guess there's ways to get free Dash by giving Dash to friends or you know, something like this.
Is this a legit site?
Yeah, this contest that's being put out there. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is legit.
Okay.
It's at dashforcenews.com. So.
Okay, cool.
There you go.
Good info. So, yeah, so we'll talk to you about whatever's on your mind. I want to make sure you have a chance to clarify, Mark, because when we went off the air there, I accused you of giving up your voluntarist card.
Which you love to do. Like, you'd love to just snatch people's voluntarist and libertarians cards.
No, I only like doing it to you.
No, you do it to everyone.
No, it's only you.
No, it's everyone.
No, it's you. You're the only one I care about, because you're the
only one with a microphone. Can I be a libertarian and still believe in a small amount of government?
Ish. You can be libertarian-ish.
No, that's not the question. You don't get to modify the questions. Yes, no question.
No, you don't.
Okay, thanks.
No, because a libertarian is basically a voluntarist.
Yeah, there you go.
And a voluntarist is someone who believes that all human interaction should be consensual. So it sounded like you were saying you wanted government forced labeling, but now you told me off the air you didn't want that.
I think that the world with government enforced labeling is better in that area than the world without.
But you're not willing to trade that in order to have a government?
Well, humans must have government. I am not unwilling
to have government like a state
for a hierarchical, top-down, enforced government with a monopoly privilege and the use of violence in a given landmass. No.
No. Okay.
I don't think it's worth that particular trade.
Okay. You had me going there, man. I thought that you were like ready to give up, you know, peace in favor of some sort of mandatory gun to the head for labeling. I'm glad to hear about that.
If you're a manufacturer that doesn't want to list all your ingredients in your product because you don't think mm-hmm. people will want to buy them because of for whatever reason, you're a douche.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, well, and that's why we should allow the marketplace to handle these situations.
Well, the marketplace has not done as well as it could in this area. It is true enough. I am sitting right here next to a box of organic green actives chocolate bar things with, I don't know, they're 90% raw, gluten-free.
Sounds awful.
They're very good. Or they're as good as any of these sports bars. I shouldn't say they're very good. But
yeah.
They're good. They're made by, in this case, Organic Food Bar. No, that's what it's called. I don't know. You can look over it and find out who it's made by. I don't have my reading glasses on. Looks like Active Greens Chocolate is the flavor in this
and
one.
And what about it?
They are labeled, there's labels all along the edge of this. If you go to the right stores, you will find labels all over your food. So in this case, they've got a solar label. They've got a certified gluten-free label.
Many of these are probably not government mandated.
The USDA organic one is.
Uh-huh.
And the non-GMO one exists on here, too. There's another one here that I can't read with the K inside the apple.
Uh-huh.
You gave away my reading glasses, and I've never gotten them back.
I didn't give anybody your reading glasses.
Where'd they go?
I have no idea, dude.
They just disappeared one day. So, anyway, we can see that the marketplace can label. It's just that they tend not to. The big food manufacturers out there do not want labeling. And they fight very hard with the government to prevent sort of government-mandated labeling. And yeah. I like the fact that I can find out how many carbohydrates, fats, and proteins are in a given food and whatever. That's information I want to have. But I'm not always going to want to go to the store and pay probably four times as much for my bar of whatever.
You mentioned this non-GMO label thing. This appears to be a voluntary label.
The non-GMO one. The USDA organic. Check that one out, buddy.
Well, it's got USDA in front of it. Obviously, that's a government label. But my point is that there are non-governmental labels.
I said that.
Yeah.
There are non-governmental labels on this. I'm pointing out that this has non-governmental labels on it. There are case examples for both sides.
Right. So,
you can go to the stuff that's imported from China at a very extraordinarily low price, that ends up with paint chips or whatever in it. I have no clue. You don't have any clue because it's not labeled. We don't know.
It's part of the fun of eating it.
Yeah, that's fun.
You never know what you're going to get.
It's fun.
The toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE. Maybe Otto Warmbier over in North Korea ate some non-labeled foods while he was in the North Korean prison that he was being held in for stealing a sign from the hotel that he was staying at like a year and a half ago. We did get the news while we were in sort of on our working vacation there from Rogers Campground that Otto Warmbier was returned from North Korea to the United States in a state of coma. Now, the update from, I believe, yesterday at MSN.com says the university student...
Is the state of room temperature?
...was detained for nearly a year and a half. He died Monday afternoon, just days after he returned home in a coma, according to his parents. He had been medically evacuated last week from North Korea and was being treated at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. His parents did not specify the cause of death, but they made clear in a written statement they blamed North Korea for what happened. Their son was arrested in January of 2016 at the end of a brief tourist visit to the isolated country. And, of course, he made a video confession, which was obviously scripted by the North Korean government. And then they put him in some sort of a prison labor camp, after which he relatively quickly ended up in a coma, was in a coma for more than a year of his captivity there.
Well, we really don't know what that's the report. We don't know what the truth is.
Correct.
But I tend to believe that. Wouldn't it just make sense that he would say, hey, I was just taking the propaganda posters so that I could show it around to my friends, tell them how great North Korea was. It's just, I mean, why wouldn't they give him a truckload and send him home? Here's a bunch for your suitcase. Go on Round Eye. Have a nice time.
Well, they're just not that kind of state, Mark.
They certainly aren't.
They just want to crack down and teach the people a lesson.
It seemed like they wanted to use him as a, some kind of bargaining chip. Why that would be, I couldn't say, but, there you go. I think that the people that used his whiteness and white privilege and all that other crap as a sort of excuse for why this happened to him and how they're not so, you know, whatever, they're not so upset, they suck. Those people suck.
Yeah, and of course, this is giving politicians in the U.S. the opportunity to grandstand about how tough they ought to be towards North Korea.
Yeah, I don't think so.
The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. We can share some of that if we want coming up here, and you can share your thoughts with us on this, or labeling food, or whatever is on your mind. You can take control of the airwaves. Just dial in toll-free to join us at 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. And you can join us on Skype as well. Our Skype username is lrn.fm. Call in how you want and get on the radio with us. It's Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, dial toll free. Join us on the radio here. You can bring up whatever you want and take control of the airwaves. Our number, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype. Skype on in here at username lrn.fm. With you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Mark.
We're talking about Otto Warmbier, the American who was arrested in North Korea over a year ago for stealing a sign, taking it down, probably with the intention of taking it home. But they caught him, and it was a sign at the hotel he was staying at, some sort of, you know, political propaganda, which is very common over in North Korea, as I understand it. And
I believe he went to a staff floor.
Yeah, that's what they said.
And got it, is the claim.
But wherever it was, he wasn't supposed to, and he was celebrating New Year's, which means he was probably, you know, drunk at the time, not thinking too clearly, and the punishment for that is apparently now death, with him having died after being in a coma now for over a year in detention in North Korea. Was what was intended to be a work camp, a labor camp prison sentence of 15 years, ended up being, he was in a coma relatively quickly thereafter. And, you know, some obviously speculate that it might have had to do with abuse at the hands of the guards, which, of course, is a good fair speculation, I would say. What are the odds that a relatively healthy young college boy will just fall into a coma on his own? I would say pretty slim. So
it could have been drug-induced, so maybe they gave him some kind of mixture to get him to tell the truth or whatever. And maybe they're going to ask him some questions about American life, and, I don't know, they OD'd him or something. This is another possibility. It seems unlikely that they would have tortured him. What would be the point?
I mean, there's no point in torture. I mean, it's just, you know, guards are sadistic in some cases. It's just sort of the nature of, doing that job, the old Stanford prison experiment. You put people in a position of authority and they embrace that role. That's something where they just start acting like they are a guard and start behaving in sadistic and twisted manners. That happened with just some college students who in no way knew that they were going to be chosen to be a guard. They didn't know what they were even signing up for when they took part in the Stanford prison experiment, and they didn't know they were going to be, you know, a guard or a prisoner or whatever, but the ones that ended up being guards ended up acting like guards and being in some ways sadistic towards their wards. I mean, that was just in a little experiment that lasted like a week or something like that. So, you know, you start putting real power into men's hands and real weapons and the ability to get away with murder in a lot of cases. Don't be surprised when people start getting away with it and they start wielding that power as they darn well please. So, but I think what's interesting is how the government here is responding to it. And according to the story over at, let's see, MSN.com, they got a quote here from Senator John McCain, who said in a statement, quote, Otto Warmbier, an American citizen, was murdered by the Kim Jong-un regime in the final year of his life. He lived the nightmare in which the North Korean people have been trapped for 70 years, forced labor, mass starvation, systematic cruelty, torture, and murder. North Korea is threatening its neighbors, destabilizing the Asia-Pacific region, and rapidly developing the technology to strike the American homeland with nuclear weapons. Now it has escalated into brutalizing Americans, including three other citizens currently imprisoned in North Korea. The United States of America cannot and should not tolerate the murder of its citizens by hostile powers. But when it comes to murdering their own citizens, that is totally fine. The United States will give those people awards and promotions because, like, when the police murder people here, they get a pat on the back.
It's like the big brother that abuses the little sibling on a regular basis, and then
but protect him from being
but
attacked.
A bully comes along and smacks the little sibling, and the big brother goes out there and beats the hell out of the bully.
Yeah, gee, yeah, thanks. Yeah, I mean, we see so many stories here in the United States about police abuse. We see, you can go to copblock.org, you can go to photographyisnotacrime.com, and you can spend a day reading all kinds of abuse stories, watching video, watching stories where the police who are involved in these beatings and murders get away with it time and time and time again. Over 1,000 people who were murdered at the hands of police last year alone in the United States. Just record numbers for the entire world. And yet we're expected to believe that the Kim Jong-un administration is the greatest threat to freedom. No, the threat to freedom is right here within the borders of the United States. It's called the federal government and your state governments.
Well, you think that that's the biggest threat to freedom on
our
the planet?
Our freedom? Oh. It's the biggest threat to our freedom.
So, you know,
it's the enemy within, not without.
I would concur with you that the government is a threat to freedom. I wonder to myself, you know, what other people think when you say something like that. So it's important to qualify a statement. You know, when people are concerned with threats of freedom, like, I don't know, criminals running amok, right? When you say
like the government.
Yeah. Well, you know, those are criminals in power.
That's right.
And the suggestion is that when the void of the criminals in power occurs, then the criminals will attempt to fill that void. Now, the fact is, we can show regularly, all the time, that, you know, frankly, police aren't needed for peaceful neighborhoods and peaceful communities, that there are communities all over that have very low crime that don't have very much as far as a police force goes. The town I live in doesn't have a police force. There's a state police that you can call in if some felony occurs or something like that, but it rarely happens. So, you know, that's an issue. There are some places that, frankly, are a heck of a lot more violent, and one wonders what would happen if the state enforced monopoly on policing was taken away from those places.
You mean in the United States?
In the United States, there's some very violent places, right?
Sure.
And
Baltimore.
I tend to think you have to get it to a level of sort of calm stability before you begin stripping off the strictures.
Oh, I don't. I disagree. I mean, I think that people. Yeah, I think that there's an argument that the police actually end up creating crime. That it's a little conspiratorial, but in areas in which the police forces have been removed, crime's gone down. You know, like towns that have completely eliminated their police forces, crime's gone down. Why is that? Are the police literally out there fomenting crime for them to have an excuse to make arrests so they can have an excuse for a budget the next year?
In many cases, there's so many things that are illegal that they're arresting people for. Right, when there's ways to lie with statistics, right? Mm-hmm. When people think of crime, what they're really mostly concerned with are property crimes and violent crimes. And most of the property crimes should be above a certain level for them to sort of care, if you know what I mean. Obviously, violent crimes are very important. Most of the crimes that police are arresting people for are drug crimes. And I'm talking above the violation level. Drug crimes, and most of those crimes are, marijuana in the states where marijuana is still illegal.
Right. Warmbier's death could push Congress to restrict or ban Americans from traveling to North Korea, which I'm surprised it hasn't been already, given that they don't allow people to go to Cuba. The Senate, state representatives, or rather U.S. House representatives from California and South Carolina have introduced the North Korea Travel Control Act to the House, which would require Americans who want to travel to North Korea to obtain a license. There would be no licenses for tourists. The Senate has been more reluctant to introduce restrictions on Americans, but Warmbier's death might be the trigger that they need, say analysts. I disagree with that as an approach here. If you want to risk going into, you know, the lion's den, then you should be free to take that risk. I would not go to North Korea. I think it sounds like while it would be a fascinating thing to do to actually see this prison state in real life, it is just, you know, it just seems like a crazy thing to go to North Korea. I mean, maybe it's not as bad as they say that it is, but
well, I think that what you're seeing here is one circumstance of one college kid who, in all likelihood, imbibed too much alcohol and decided he was going to be, you know, froggy, and things went poorly for him. I would imagine that hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans visit North Korea every year, and therefore, I would guess that many thousands of other foreigners visit North Korea every year. And, yeah, you know, things go okay. There are three, as I recall, there are three Americans still incarcerated in North Korea. But, you know, most of those people were activists. Otto Warmbier apparently was a dummy.
The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. According to Vox.com, over 800 Americans go to North Korea each year. I'm just curious as to how many that was. 800.
Okay.
855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733 for $2,000. You can get the ultimate experience of touring Pyongyang on Victory Day, the festival where North Koreans commemorate the end of the Korean War. So there you go, $2,000. We'll get you there and back, hopefully. More coming up here. It's Free Talk Live.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live. You dial toll-free. Bring up anything you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. We've got Skype, and the Skype username is lrn.fm. If you want to get on the air with us, you can do that. Or we'll talk about stuff that we think you might find interesting with you tonight in the studio in beautiful Keene, New Hampshire, back from a several-day-long vacation, working vacation, if you will, to Rogers Campground for Somalia Fest and Shire Fest 2017. It was a lot of fun. Still kind of winding down and, you know, got to unpack. Haven't even had a chance to do that yet, but it's good to be back. Good to be back on the air where we can take your phone calls because we couldn't do that from on the campground. So our toll-free number again, 855-450-FREE, like freedom. Mark, I got to admit, I know we've talked about cultural appropriation, but I don't really know what that means. Apparently, that's something you wanted to discuss tonight with the headline from the CBC in Canada saying that delegates in Geneva from 189 countries are looking at the issue, whatever that means, and they want to possibly make it illegal worldwide. Now, isn't this something about like dressing up like an Indian for Halloween is cultural appropriation? They want to make that illegal?
Well, you know, if you start asking for definitions of cultural appropriation, you're going to get things that go all across the board.
Okay.
You know, it whether it's the way that somebody braids their hair, the sorts of clothes they wish to wear, the types of food they prepare for sale, usually not the types of food they eat, but types of food they might choose to sell.
So if I want to make a taco and sell that as
Mexican
food. Whoa,
what are you talking about? You going to talk about that on the radio? You're going to say racist things on the radio, Ian? Is that what you're going
to
do?
That's not racist. Racism is to believe that one race is inherently superior to another.
That's racist.
That is racist.
No, just defining racism differently than I define racism is racist. See, that's the new millennium culture that we've now. I'm not talking blaming the millennials, although I'm sure that plenty of them are at fault on this. We've essentially stepped into an area where everything I disagree with is racist, right? And that's what a cultural appropriation thing seems to be about. It's like, hey, you can't wear the U2 T-shirt. I saw them in 1987 at Janus Landing in Tampa. I knew you're younger than I am. You don't know anything about U2. I'm older. Like this is
it's all about me.
It's making somebody else's stuff about you. Mm-hmm. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous. On one hand, it's racist by its nature, because it says, you know, the stuff I've got going on is really important. The stuff you've got going on is inconsequential. So I don't know this for sure, but let's say that the iPad or and smartphones were created by, you know, white people. Let's just say that was the case. Does that mean that somebody who is from some other culture that's really worried about cultural appropriation, because I certainly wouldn't say that somebody who's not worried about it should follow these stupid rules, but somebody who is worried about that stuff should not use that item because it's not made by somebody of their skin color?
Is that really what we're talking about
here? It's just all so confusing and stupid.
Well, maybe the story here from CBC will clear some of it up, but I don't know.
I suspect not.
We'll see here, because this is the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, so it's government news out of Canada. Story here that says Indigenous advocates from around the world are calling on a UN committee to ban the appropriation of Indigenous cultures and to do so quickly. Delegates from 189 countries, including Canada, are in Geneva this week as part of a specialized international committee within the World Intellectual Property Organization, a United States agency. Since it began in 2001, the committee has been working on creating and finishing three pieces of international law that would expand intellectual property regulations to protect things like Indigenous designs, dances, words, and traditional medicines.
Indigenous designs, dances, words, and what? Fruits and berries?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. The meeting takes place as concern grows worldwide about the rights of cultures. So, well, that's an interesting idea. Cultures have rights?
Right. And I am the one with the microphone, so I get to decide which cultures have what. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. A culture? Define that.
I can't. I don't know what
that
means.
Do you remember when tribal tattoos were big in, like, the 90s?
I didn't know they weren't big now, but okay.
I'm pretty sure that people aren't doing those things much anymore.
All right.
Is that cultural appropriation? I didn't hear much about
it. What about the Chinese symbols? People still get those.
I think that, well, the Chinese write American words on their products
sure.
and stuff,
check
too.
Check out Ingrish.com. It's hilarious.
There's probably some trashy Chinese girl running around with, you know, chicken written on her fanny or whatever.
Or bitch or something like that.
Thinking it's a cool thing to have written there. Whatever it might be. Now, you got to remember, people like Japanese culture, they tend to like the fact that their culture is exported. Mm. But you will find plenty of upset liberals out there that you might wear a kimono or something, because that's what you're comfortable wearing at home. I mean, I've heard of people doing this. I don't know. Just wear my underpants.
I love Ingrish.com. It's been a while since I've been there. It's just picture after picture from people who, you know, visited various different Asian countries and had found just brutally bad translations of English, and so they call it Ingrish, and they show those photos, and man, they are just funny stuff. Feel free to go and check that out as you wish. But why do people take this stuff so seriously? I mean, if somebody wants to appropriate something from Free Talk Live, I say go for it. Have fun with it. Make a joke out of a picture that we made. Remember, you know, a long time ago we had the Free Talk Live Photoshop section on the BBS. Like, hey, take our images. Have fun with them. Make fun of them. Who cares? I mean, God, take it easy. People get so upset.
Because if you can carve out a little piece of sort of media for yourself, then you can be the new Jesse Jackson of whatever it is that you're doing. It makes something that's not about you about you, right? So say you got a beach towel with some feathers on it. Suddenly that's a Native American cultural appropriation or First Peoples cultural appropriation or whatever.
Now someone can feel offended.
Some activist says one way or another.
They're hurting me.
Right, well, that's the note. Just because it's got some feathers on it, I don't even know what this means. I don't even know. You got a dream catcher hanging from your rear view mirror in your car? Cultural appropriation.
Wow.
Can you imagine
the enforcement?
Show
of
me
this?
The harm. And
yeah, hurt feelings don't count. I mean, look, if your butt hurt, that's not a crime. It shouldn't be. You need to just toughen up. thicken the skin a little bit. Try not caring what other people do with their things and their time.
And
who cares?
You know, it's I just don't understand why the big fuss all over it all is.
I don't know. People are bored. They need something to feel like they matter about. I don't know.
I mean, I'm of the opinion that the Washington's football team there, that is not cultural appropriation, but offensive speech. And so I'm sort of against that. I may go so far as to say the Cleveland Indians mascot looks a little shifty. I'm not 100% sure of that.
Yeah, but aren't those teams changing those mascots on their own volition based on the market?
I haven't seen that happen much.
No, okay.
But
I thought I heard they were doing that.
I can tell you that if you go to if you go to some reservation and they you find some sports team there at the reservation, the chance of them being called the Braves or the Warriors is high.
Uh-huh.
And that isn't, they're not, being offensive to themselves or anything like that. So, you know, to say that some group of people can't, you know, have some name to celebrate some group of people just seems ridiculous to me. No one gets upset about the Minnesota Vikings, even though plenty of the players are probably not Scandinavian. You know what I mean? Mm. So that's just, to me, it's all just a bunch of hooey. And the fact that this stuff continues to get press, I think it needs to be addressed at this point in order to be stopped.
Well, let's find out more about exactly what these bureaucrats are talking about. What is it that they want to control? How do they want to control these cultural ideas? 855-450-FREE, because this sounds like a really scary concept that they're going to put into place. This is Free Talk Live. You can join us on the air. Hey, it's Free Talk Live. Dial in toll free. Join us on the radio here. Bring up anything you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733, and Skype in at Skype username lrn.fm. We're talking about cultural appropriation, which is an idea that I got to admit I got a real loose grasp on. It's kind of hard to really understand it. It seems to have something to do, according to the CBC, with the idea somehow that a culture could have a right to control something. That's what they're saying here in this story at cbc.ca about a UN meeting with 189 countries' delegates, including Canada, are in Geneva talking about potential law, international law, that would expand intellectual property regulations to protect things like indigenous designs, dances, words, and traditional medicines. We'll tell you more about that. You can share your thoughts here. It's Ian and Mark. Also, do want to let you know about freetalklive.com, where you can go and download archives of the show that go back for years. If you missed us at the Somalia Fest and Shire Fest this last weekend, you can download all those episodes, of course, and any others that you like for free right there at freetalklive.com. In fact, we've got RSS feeds, podcasts, which you can plug into your favorite podcast client and receive our shows directly as they are available for download. That's what makes podcasts pretty handy. So if you want to check out our feeds, go to feeds.freetalklive.com. That's feeds.freetalklive.com. Back to the story here. It says here, the meeting takes place as concern grows worldwide about the rights of cultures to control their own materials, which is a term that is very disturbing to me, because rights are something that belong to individuals. Rights are something that we, you know, grant to one another to allow human beings to better get along, to better interact respectfully and honorably with one another. It's a good thing that we've come up with the idea of individual rights, because it allows the individual to be protected. And the individual should be the minority that has, you know, the highest status, not some arbitrary collective, not some arbitrary group or culture, which, as you said, how the hell do you define what a culture is? Because there are so many, even if you could point out a culture, I could probably point out to you 100 different subcultures within that are very distinct. I mean, we were just at this Freedom Festival, which now it's moving into a different Freedom Festival, and there's two distinct cultures at least within those two festivals, and then more within those. So, I mean, you just get down to all these definitions and trying to understand what cultures and where and how can a culture control anything? Who's in charge of a culture?
Right.
What?
That's why we have property rights and individual rights. And individual rights spring from the fact that you own your body, that you have control over your body, and therefore you own your body. Mm-hmm. Whereas these are just sort of new things. I'm willing to talk about, like, for instance, Egypt wants to have a lot of its artifacts returned to it. This is also happening with many Native American, sort of tribes want to see their artifacts that have gone hither and nigh across the world to sort of educate people in museums and sometimes some cases private collections and things like that. They want them returned.
Hmm.
They don't want to pay for them. They just want the stuff returned. And I think that there might be an argument, like there's a perhaps an opportunity to begin a discussion about each individual thing. Right. Like as to why it might return or whatever. But, Egypt has done very well at getting this done. Sort of everything Egypt-y is ours. Mm-hmm. Because we now control this plot of land that we have nothing to do with the ancient Egyptians. But whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas the Native Americans are beginning, different tribes are beginning to attempt to do this sort of thing. Now, I feel like having all this stuff all over the place is good because it educates people.
Right.
And they can learn about different cultures and that sort of thing.
Isn't it a benefit?
It's not so scary.
Right. I mean, this sounds like, it sounds like white supremacy almost, the idea, or any race supremacy. It sounds like, our race is so important that we have to keep it pure. We have to keep all of the things that our race has created in our own hands. We don't want to share our ideas with other races or other demographics or whatever. And it just sounds like bigotry. It sounds like, to me, I think there's a benefit for cultures mixing together. I think that there's a benefit for peoples from all over the world mixing together, from ideas mixing together.
That's the melting pot theory.
Right.
But there's the opposing theory, which is multiculturalism, that all cultures are basically a valuable, and they all should be preserved, and they can coexist alongside each other. I tend not to believe that particular theory. I'm more
That sounds like a race purity thing to me. It sounds like another rewording of that.
In some cases, you could be just concerned that history is being destroyed, right? So I read a meme today. I don't know if this is true, people. I just read it on the internet, mm-hmm. So you take it for what it is. But there's a language in Mexico that is spoken by so few people that is spoken currently by two people who refuse to talk to each other. And this shows this sort of sourpussed Mexican person. For whatever reason. I'm sure there are languages, right, that are spoken by a very small group of people. Those people tend to be old, and, that language is going to disappear. My heart does not flutter in upset over the notion of languages disappearing.
I love it.
Lots of languages have disappeared over time. And
God, it would be so much easier if everybody spoke the same language.
Wouldn't it now? I tend to agree. Now, I get to sit in the privileged position of speaking that language, right?
Sure.
Like, I am I speak the dominant accent of the dominant language on the planet. I don't run around talking like people who talk like where I come from, right? I don't talk like that. I speak in the Midland accent, as you do.
Okay.
We were raised by Yankees in Florida, so, that's just kind of how we ended up talking, is we got that dominant accent. And it's no surprise that we're happy about the notion of the whole world having to learn our language. At some point in the future, we won't even have to bother learning Spanish. I like learning Spanish. I like pronouncing things properly.
Yeah.
But I don't even do it anymore because I kind of feel like that's a little bit of cultural appropriation. What's this white guy trying to sound like he can speak Spanish for?
I don't even think about that stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how it is.
Why would it be? Yeah, I just don't understand why somebody would think negatively about someone trying to speak another person's language.
The muddy mess. And that, this whole notion of cultural appropriation has brought us to.
Let me dig further here into the story. In the U.S. this week, designer Tory Burch agreed to change the description of one of her coats for women after Romanians protested that it had been described as African-inspired when it actually appropriated a traditional Romanian garment.
Wow. So people were so upset over some designer's piece of clothing that no more than, you know, a few thousand people are ever going to drape upon their body, that they protested the fact that it was misadvertised or mislabeled over
well,
this?
Well, it depends on what you mean by a protest. Sending an email is a protest, right? I don't see a particular problem with sending an email and saying, hey, that African coat of yours, it's Romanian.
Speaking to the committee Monday, Dean of the University of Colorado said the UN's negotiated document should, quote, obligate states to create effective criminal and civil enforcement procedures to recognize and prevent the non-consensual taking and illegitimate possession of traditional cultural expressions. More on the way. Free Talk Live.
This is Riley Blake, producer of the Free Talk Live Daily Digest. In addition to the Digest, I host my own weekly podcast called Anarcho Agenda, providing you liberty-oriented content without all the statism. Subscribe to Anarcho Agenda on iTunes, Google Play, or visit anarchoagenda.libsyn.com. That's anarchoagenda.libsyn.com for further details.
Free Talk Live. We're here. We'll take your calls about anything you want. All you have to do is dial in. Toll free at 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Skype in at Skype username lrn.fm. Tonight in the studio, it's Ian here.
And Mark.
We are talking about cultural appropriation, whatever the hell that is. I'm still trying to figure it out. Apparently, the idea is that a culture could somehow have a right to control its own materials, which is just mind-boggling to me. I mean, what that means. You have to first define culture and then define, you know, explain to me how a culture could have any kind of right to control anything at all.
That's
how do you define who's in that culture?
That's the authoritarian trick. The authoritarian trick is to find something to control and then find a way to control it. So, you know,
some sort of nebulous way where they can arbitrarily define things.
It's not that, you know, a culture shouldn't have control of its items and medicine and blah, 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 whatever they're listing there. It's that a culture doesn't exist. And therefore, what you're saying is a group of people who identify as the culture police for that particular culture are going to decide. And in all likelihood, by what I've seen, those people are going to be white Democrats from America.
Well, whoever it is, I don't care who makes those decisions. It's none of their damn business what people do with their stuff. When you want to you know, sew a piece of clothing together, who cares what design you put on it? You know, to me, it's none of my business what you do with your own threads and your needles. But these people are saying that if you don't belong to their arbitrary group, which is defined in some arbitrary way, that you can't put those things together in whatever method you want to. And to take advice from some school administrator or, you know, some bureaucrat, basically. In this case, it's the University of Colorado the University of Colorado Dean, James Anaya, who is living up in his ivory white tower of academia, has no idea what the real world is like. This guy is speaking to a committee of over 189 nations at the UN, asking for laws that, quote, obligate states to create effective criminal and civil enforcement procedures to recognize and prevent the non-consensual taking and illegitimate possession, sale, and export of traditional cultural expressions. I mean,
expressions.
That is a scary idea. Who gets to decide who can consent? As you said, it's going to be some bureaucrat or somebody who's arbitrarily selected.
Right.
What if someone within that culture does consent? What if somebody's like, sure, take all the Indian crap you want. I don't care. Here, you know, use it however you want to. Oh, well, somebody disagrees with that. Does that mean the other guy gets overrided? Where do these rules come from?
Right. So this is the black guy selling tacos. This is the white lady running a yoga studio. This is what we're talking about here. And the idea that we need new in this over offended culture, we need new things to be offended about.
Yeah.
It's disturbing. It's dizzying. It's exhausting. How do these people find the the minutes in a day to be offended by all the things that one needs to be offended about these days?
Great question. Anaya said the document should also look at products that are falsely advertised as indigenous made or endorsed by indigenous groups. That would mean products like those in U.S.-based retailer Urban Outfitters Navajo line, saying that including, quote, Navajo hipster panties, a peace treaty feather necklace, and a Navajo print flask.
So what do you think about that? That's an interesting question. Now you're basically talking about a trademark to some extent. Like, for instance, if somebody made a product and said, Free Talk Live endorsed, or Ian Freeman endorsed.
Well, that's false, right? Like, that's a false statement.
Well, okay, it is, but what about this Navajo? When you're calling your line of clothing, and I'm just presuming, I don't know anything about this case, but let's just say...
I'll look up the hipster panties
Urban,
for you, Mark.
Urban Outfitters has a line of clothing they're calling Navajo, and there's a tribe of people that call themselves Navajo. One would presume that tribe has a leadership council. Would not the leadership council then control essentially the branding of that word Navajo?
No, because I think that the in the individual's case, you know, if you say so-and-so person's endorsed this
fine,
thing and,
Free
they,
Talk
and they didn't
Live
actually
endorsed.
Endorse it, then, you know, that's an individual rights matter. Free Talk Live endorsed, again, you can define what Free Talk Live is fairly easily.
You could define what a Navajo is, too. I mean, Navajo is something clear.
Somebody with, what, 1% of Navajo blood, 10%, 20%? What does that mean?
I don't know. To me, what it says...
Do you get to decide what to do with Navajo if you have over a certain percentage of blood, or if it's less than a certain percentage? Sorry, you just don't have any influence?
Right. So if I create a line of clothing that is called, you know, Bradenton White Trash, right? Try to take that from me, huh? Cultural appropriationists. If I call it that... Then, and it doesn't have to be every white trash from Bradenton. It could just be me, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what the claim is that you're making. I think it sounds legit. If a Navajo person created Navajo, you know, brand clothing, then that would be pretty legit. If then that Navajo brand clothing was bought by Urban Outfitters, then they bought a brand.
But I don't care if Urban Outfitters makes an Indian-looking design and calls it Navajo. I mean, who cares?
But the Navajo, some Navajo do.
That's the thing. It's just these people looking to get offended about something. Again, I don't see why it matters. You know, was it Navajo inspired? Sure, they thought of the Navajo when they saw this design. Anyway, the story here: the Navajo Nation launched a legal battle against the company for trademark infringement. In 2012, the case was settled out of court last year. Anaya is one of several indigenous leaders at this round of negotiations who are questioning just how seriously some member states are taking the negotiations. The committee has been working on three draft documents for 16 years.
They're pretty busy.
16 years. Doesn't sound like they're that busy at all. It's a painstakingly slow process, and member states are now going through them line by line. And some indigenous leaders say they're frustrated and disenchanted about the committee's future. The, let's see here, Aroha Te Parake Made, a member of the Ngāti Awa and Ngāti Poru tribes in New Zealand, says, quote, we're only halfway through 2017, and yet the number of occurrences of misappropriation happening to indigenous peoples in all regions of the world seems relentless, with no relief in sight. I mean, it almost sounds like they're dizzied by the, you know, as he said, relentless appropriations, like left and right. These people are just misappropriating our culture, and it just hurts so much. In this UN panel, they're just dragging their feet, and all the while we're being offended day in and day out. We need prison sentences to feel better about all this.
I kind of feel them. Like, so for instance, you know, the way the news talks about libertarians, the way the media talks about libertarians, I kind of feel that way. It's like they never get it right. They never you know, nail down exactly what it is to be libertarian, mm-hmm. At least not by my definitions. And of course, Free Talk Live is the center of the libertarian universe, so you must come here for your libertarian cultural awareness.
But the difference is, and I see where you're coming from with that, but the difference between us and them is we just get on the air and clarify. We just get on the air and say, hey, no, they're wrong about that.
But these people don't have a voice, and that's what really...
The hell they don't. They can start a podcast.
That's their complaint. Their complaint is that not enough
they're
not being heard. If they felt more heard, then this wouldn't be
an
issue.
Then they wouldn't need guns?
That's what it comes down to. Wow. Now, I'm not saying you have no right to be heard. You have a right to speak, but you have no right to be heard. So I think that's really ultimately what it comes down to here. But, yeah, I mean, you know, what I think they're feeling is they're feeling, in this case, Maori or whatever. They're feeling like the Maoris are being misrepresented. My dear God, Disney did this movie, and that's not exactly right. And look at all these fat people and blah, 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 blah. Right? It's just like never-ending upset over how they're being portrayed. Upset, you know. That's how. Welcome to everybody's world. Their little important corner is never properly expressed. Look at how upset people got about the geeks got about the Big Bang Theory.
We've got more on the way here. You can take control of the airwaves and bring up whatever you want. 855-450-3733. There's more about the cultural appropriation nonsense coming up, and you can weigh in as well on Free Talk Live. Hey, it's Free Talk Live. Dial toll-free and join us here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. It's 855-450-3733. In these moments that remain, we've got time for you if you want to join us here. With you tonight, it's Ian.
And Mark.
And you can Skype in at Skype username lrn.fm. Hey, if you want to get interactive with other Free Talk Live listeners, we're doing a little experiment with a new forum that we've got set up at forum.freetalklive.com. There's a little bit of activity there. It's kind of slow, but if you want to check it out, you're welcome to drop on in. And if you're a Free Talk Live amplifier, be sure you let me know by sending me a private message that you've signed up for the forum, and I'll get you your Free Talk Live amp badge for the forum. So everybody that sees your post knows that you are a Free Talk Live amplifier, meaning you have gotten behind Free Talk Live for as little as $5 a month and are helping us spread the ideas of liberty around the globe and into new people's ears via radio stations, over 170 radio stations coast to coast in the United States, and of course worldwide via satellite and online via the internet. We've got a lot of different ways to reach people with the ideas of freedom, but we can do more and do better with your help. You get perks like access to the AMP only call-in lines, AMP only podcast, AMP only Facebook group, and that special AMP only badge for the new Free Talk Live forum. Just go to amp.freetalklive.com to learn more about that and get signed up with Bitcoin or with credit card or PayPal. Once again, that's AMP, A-M-P, amp.freetalklive.com. Now, we're talking about this cultural appropriation nonsense that's coming out of the UN, where apparently now for 16 years... they have been working on legislation that would create some sort of international copyright law or some kind of intellectual property restrictions that would allow people who are in a certain culture to complain about and get the people punished who are so-called appropriating their ideas, taking some sort of thing or concept created by someone within that culture and then utilizing it in their own, you know, productive manner and creating some new product with, you know, Navajo fill in the blank or whatever, that's somehow going to be a crime. And according to one of these people that has been complaining about this, this is one of the tribe representatives from New Zealand, from the Ngāti Awa, Ngāti Paru tribes, Mr. Aroha Mead. Mead said the part of the problem is that the indigenous groups around the world have no idea about the committee's work and often aren't being consulted by member states. He said, quote, people at a national level don't know what's going on, and there aren't many processes where you can get information about this or contribute to the positions that are being taken here. He noticed the WIPO has what she called, or she, I guess, called one of the lowest rates of indigenous participation. Maybe they just don't care. Maybe there's only a small portion of these cultures who actually care about what people do with ideas as far as sharing and borrowing ideas are concerned. Because the cool thing about ideas is if I copy your idea, it doesn't diminish the fact that you still have it. There's no lack of supply involved there. There's no shortage when it comes to copying ideas. Maybe most of these indigenous people are busy enough running their own lives, running their own businesses, taking care of their own families.
Making the world a better place, right, hopefully.
And you know, creating their own products and services, which they can market as legitimately Navajo or whatever, and you know, get the extra bonus points that they get for being legitimate. I mean, maybe they're fine with how life is. Maybe they're satisfied and satiated, and they're happy with the way things are in the world, and they don't care what other people are doing. Maybe that's why they're having a tough time finding out or caring about what the UN is busy doing. I mean, who wants to get involved in these political processes to try to control their neighbors, except the worst order of control freaks?
I wonder if the UN's going to go after the Goth kids for co-opting the Ostrogoth and Visigoth nomenclature to create their own, I don't know, black wearing makeup sun fearing thing.
Mm. Who was wearing black first? They should have a right to restrict anyone from
black
wearing black.
Was probably, you know, for one, worn by a person who had was wearing the fur of something that they killed that was black.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it was probably pretty expensive dye. You know, dyes, paints, these kind of things were high end stuff as far as trade went. Spices, too.
Quote, the issues being discussed at this committee are also being discussed in indigenous organizations and communities all around the world on a regular basis. So why are there not more indigenous representatives here? She asked. There are indigenous groups from around the world taking part in this round of negotiations, including groups from New Zealand, Kenya, Mexico, Colombia, and the United States. And there is no indigenous representation in the Canadian delegation. So anyway, they go on to talk a little bit about Canada with that.
Yeah, but Canada has a big deal with the First Nations there. So they had at one point these, I can't remember exactly, Indian schools, government-run schools that essentially Native Americans, this happened in the United States too, they were forced to go to. And they, you know, they had their hair cut and they were taught Christianity and, you know, there were all kinds of abuses that occurred inside of them. Mind you, there are all kinds of abuses that occurred in every school in Canada at the time. Mm-hmm. You can be assured that corporal punishment was being administered. Now, you know, I think that it's true that there was some dehumanization that was going on and therefore that the treatment was worse. But I mean, ultimately, once the perpetrator has been stopped from committing the crime and then the punishment has been meted out, whatever that punishment might be, what else is there to do?
I don't know. That's
need
it.
You go after the children and the children of the children of the perpetrator? Must every person that has the similar amount of melanin in their skin be pilloried for something that was done to great grandfather or whatever? You know, in many cases it's grandfather, in some cases it's father. You know, it didn't happen that long ago. But it, I mean, you know, at some point or another, we're all going to have to forgive each other. We're all going to have to forgive the people in the past. It's not like any group of people has been particularly well treated except for the rich, right?
Yeah.
Like they've always
done pretty well.
I'm kind of interested in how well the rich have done over the course of thousands of years. You know, somebody that was, say, a king. I just read read an article that women were seven times more likely to procreate 8,000 years ago than men were. You know why? Because they had their testicles removed. They were unicized, as it were. So obviously the rich were the most likely to procreate at that time in most given cultures. So in a lot of cases, we're all descended from rich people. But has that wealth been able to stay along a particular line of people, or does it keep on rising and falling throughout human history?
I haven't the slightest clue.
I can't imagine that you can answer this question. This is a question for some historian to be able to sort of follow throughout. I expect to get a bunch of conspiracy theory nonsense by asking this question, but I would suspect, if I had to make a guess, that wealth tends to come in waves, that, you know, thieves calling themselves the new government or revolutionaries or whatever, sweep in, take the wealth, and then, you know, the wealth has been taken from, you know, whatever group of people that were doing very well. I would also remind everyone that you're probably a hell of a lot wealthier than the wealthiest person from the 1850s.
Yeah, you've got air conditioning, you've got television, you've got heating, you've got
cell phone, car,
comfortable things that make life so much better and so much easier to live, that allow you to have luxury time, the amount of time that you have to whine about cultural appropriation and all this other crap that nobody who actually is working you know, for a living has time to do. The, you know, that we have so much time to ourselves that it's incredible. You know, you only have to work 40 hours a week instead of, you know, 100 slaving over a farmland or something like that, doing some sort of backbreaking task in order to eke out a living. That, I mean,
it was
so
only
much
in
nicer.
The early 1900s, only in the early 20th century that Americans began to move en masse from farms to cities.
We didn't have refrigeration until, you know, the 20th century.
If they were moving from farms to cities, they ceased doing the crappiest of labor.
Yeah.
The crappiest labor on the planet is manual farm labor.
Yeah, it sounds pretty awful.
Really pretty awful. This is the kind of labor that poor people in Bangladesh choose to work in factories with no fire exits in rather than do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I need to – I probably wasn't entirely clear on that statement, but farm labor is so bad that people in, you know, Bangladesh – prefer to work in sweatshops where they're likely to be burned, you quite have a much likelier chance of being burned alive than doing farm work. Mm-hmm. They choose that job over farm work. Well, how do I know? Because they're in that job. Farm work is...
it's a move up.
Yeah. Farm work is the basis of work, and Americans just moved out of that, you know, less than a century ago.
We are out of time tonight, but we're going to be back in the studio tomorrow as Mark's going to be heading up the Thursday night episode since Daryl is still up at Rogers Campground.
I love how you get Thursday night off. I didn't get Thursday night off last week.
It's tough times, man. Tough times. Just how the schedule's worked out.
You just love to take my job.
This is Free Talk Live.
So the protection of life, liberty, and property is what the Free State Project is all about. But it's an effort to move 20,000 people who understand.
It's about demonstrating to the entire country
that, yeah, we can have a free market, a truly free market.
Making it just a freer, great place to live.
It's the world's largest voluntarist libertarian community, and it's only getting bigger.
That's amazing, to be able to move to a place where other people like passionately believe in being free and independent.
What the Free State Project is managing to do, though, is to put their money where their mouth is. It's physically getting up across the country and saying, let's go someplace and let's demonstrate the power of these ideas. There's a lot of kind of philosophy that surrounds liberty. There's a lot of thinking about it and talking about it. But here in New Hampshire, people are doing it.
101 Reasons Liberty Lives in New Hampshire, a documentary by Free State Project Early Movers. Watch it free at 101reasonsfilm.com. 101reasonsfilm.com.